really profound or moving, you know, that's powerful. Because something, power, I think we just fundamentally almost think of it as something that kind of moves us or has the power to undo us or something like that, or oppress us. Or so I love the idea, as I've studied, the gentleness, being a fruit of the Spirit, right? The Spirit of God is the presence of God in our lives. So when we talk about these fruits of the Spirit, we're saying because the presence of God is active in our lives, because everywhere we go, everything we do, everyone we talk to, we are in God's presence because God's Spirit is in us. By the way, the Church of Nazareth, traditionally, we've called that sanctification, or entire sanctification. When the Spirit of God is so a part of your life that you go nowhere or do anything without the recognition that God's presence is here with me, shaping me and guiding my responses. So to say that to be gentle is a fruit of the Spirit is to say, because God's presence is with me everywhere I am, my life is filled with the same gentility that I've experienced in God. This week I was really trying to think about how to share this. There aren't a lot of passages that describe gentility. There are a lot that say be gentle, but there aren't a lot that describe it. Most of them that do, like the one we're going to look at this morning, doesn't really use the word gentle in the passage. It just kind of defines gentility by the passage. And then earlier this week I was asleep, as I am not very often these days. And you, parents, you know about that. And there was one moment, me and Katie were at district assembly this week, and so we were in a hotel room, and it was kind of one of those, got to be up by about 6:30 every morning, 6 o'clock, 6:30 every morning. And so whenever Jude would wake up during the night, it was an especially like a, oh, you know, kind of patience testing thing. And I remember waking up at one point in the night, and he had been screaming and screaming and screaming and screaming. And Katie had kept getting up and putting his pacifier in his mouth, you know. And he'd take it just long enough for her to get laid back down. And then right when she'd start to go to sleep, he'd just scream again, you know. Your parents, you know what this is like. And you can't get any rest. And I could see the frustration on Katie's face. And so I got up and did it a few times. But he just kept doing it. And finally, I remember I was half asleep and I looked over. And I watched Katie go over to him and look down at him. And he's just screaming, right? I mean, it's just like you can't, you know. Parents, you know what it's like. You're so tired, you just want to rest. And this baby just screaming. And I watched her reach down to this child that had not allowed her to sleep all night, that had been screaming at her. Somebody said, oh, Jude loves his daddy. I was like, Jude doesn't love his daddy. He doesn't know what that is yet, because love is patient, and there's no patience here. So screaming and screaming and screaming and screaming. And Katie looks down at him and goes, and then so gently, like didn't even grab him, but like put her hands on the bed and pressed down on the bed so she could slide her hands under him without jostling him, and lifted him up to hold him and began to rock him. And I thought, God is there in that screaming, needy, hungry, dirty child who doesn't even really understand what his need is. He's just screaming for help for somebody. And in a parent that is exhausted and weary and aggravated and frustrated, and who nevertheless reaches down and intentionally so gently lifts up that child to meet the need. God is there. That is the gentility that is a fruit of the Spirit. And in that image there, I thought about this passage and what we'll be speaking out of this morning. Jesus, so often when trying to explain something like love or peace or freedom, he would not give us a definition, but a story. And so this morning I want to share your story with you, the story of God and God's people as it comes to us from the book of Hosea, who is a prophet from long ago. Hosea chapter 11, verses 1 through 9. And this is powerful without any need of embellishment. Chapter 11 of the book of Hosea. This is the word of the Lord. When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Egypt I called my son. And the more I called them, the more they went from me. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and offering incense to idols. And yet, it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of human kindness and bands of love, and I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them. They shall return to the land of Egypt, and Assyria will be their king, because they have refused to turn to me. The sword rages in their cities. It consumes their oracle priests and devours because they're schemers. And my people are bent on turning away from me to the Most High they call, but he doesn't raise them up at all. But how can I give you up, Ephraim? How could I hand you over, O Israel? How can I make you like Admah? How can I treat you like Zeboim? My heart recoils within me as my compassion grows warm and tender. I will not execute my fierce anger. I will not again destroy Ephraim, because I am God. I am not a mortal. I am the Holy One in your midst and will not come in wrath. Thanks be to God. Let me pray for us one more time. Father, may we discover the gentility of your love for us, that your justice, your righteousness, your divinity is not compromised by the gentility that's been described in this passage. God, I think if we could just grasp how gentle you've been with us, I think that's enough to shape us into gentle people as we receive others. We pray this in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. In this passage, it starts out and God says, when Israel was a child, when Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. I love this passage because God is looking back on God's relationship with God's people, who in this passage God calls by a few names. Ephraim is one of the names that God calls his son, or Israel. Israel is another name that God uses for his son. My people is another name. But throughout this, what God is doing is he's saying, this is what my relationship to you has looked like. This is how I've related to you and how you've related to me. Out of Egypt, I called you my son. Egypt is a place where the Israelites were slaves. They were lower than low. They were considered subhuman being species. In terms of children, they were treated like breeding cattle that could just be halted at any moment. As far as value, they were tossed into rivers and thirsted to death, and drowned to death. In terms of sustenance, they were starved, they were beaten, they were wearied and oppressed, and they were treated like animals in terms of what they were allowed to consume, only as long as they produced for the system that saw them not as human beings, but as subhuman production services to make bricks and mortar, to build monuments to their own oppressors. These people that God is talking about were literally worthless in the eyes of the world. And yet when they were slaves, worthless, subhuman, treated as nothing, those are the people that God says, I called you out and named you as my child and my son. Literally what God is saying is, there was nothing in you there was nothing in you that was deserving of me being your father. There was nothing in you that made you deserving of my love. You were slaves in Egypt, and I set you free. And I called you my child and my son. Why? Love. Love. That's the only reason given. It doesn't make sense. Why would the Creator of all things want to invest in enslaved people? Love. Even when you were in that broken, oppressed place, I lifted you out and said, you're mine. And I loved you. I loved you, God says. This is how I related to you. And when you were young, I taught you to walk. by taking you up in my arms. The language here that is being used is like when we grab the hands of a toddler with our fingers and we walk behind them and teach them to step on their own, right? It's that imagery of even before they can stand up on their own two feet, we desire that they should learn what it means to be fully developed and matured. And so we carefully, oh so carefully, making sure that they don't fall on their faces, lead them in the journey. And God says, I called you my son. I lifted you up out of the brokenness and oppression of your slavery. And I began to teach you what it meant to be my people. I taught you to walk gently. God says in this passage, not only that, but he says, I treated you and I led you. I led you with cords of human kindness. A people that had only been accustomed to being led by whips, brutality, wrath. God says, I called you out as my children. I began to tenderly treat you, teach you how to be mine, and I led you with tenderness and kindness. I lifted you up, God says, the way that a father lifts a son to his cheek. And then God says, in motherly language, describing God's self, and I bent down and lifted you up and fed you. In motherly language, the way that a mother would nurse a child. I lifted you up. And the imagery there is that you got your life from my life. As you learned to live on me. This is how God has treated these people. The language here is so tender. It's so gentle. I mean, just think about this. Think about us. Think about how undeserving, how broken, how enslaved to powers that oppress, powers that deceive and lie, a world that categorizes us in terms of our productivity and our output, a world that sees us as nothing more but an instrument, a means to an end, whether that be making money or building a company or doing right for someone else. This world just milks us of all that we are, treating us as nothing more but slaves to an end of whatever power desires. And God says, I found you there when you had nothing to offer, nothing. I found you weak and oppressed and enslaved. And God doesn't come and say, you know what, you're really lucky to have me because you're a bunch of lowlives. I mean, look at you, you're slaves, you're miserable, you're petty, you're nothing, and I'm going to whip you into shape. But God says instead, when I found you in that place, I was so tender with you. And I didn't say, I'll lead you, but remember, I'm the leader, you're the follower. I'm the God and you're not. I'm the master, you're the slave. But rather, he uses language like a father teaching a child to walk with the gentle leading of the fingers and the lifting up to embrace against the cheek. The idea of a mother who scoops up, gently scoops that crying child off the bed in need and teaches that child that where this child will find life is in the life of the mother. That's the language that God uses to describe the way he is related to these people. But in the midst of this intertwined is the response of those people to God. I just became a parent. We were at District Assembly, and they invited parents to begin praying. And one of the things that we prayed for was parents who have children that are away from them, that they don't have good relationships with, children whose lives are broken and that are lost. And I can't imagine that pain. As God says, even as I called you my children, you did not call me your God. Instead, you turned to other powers. As I healed you, you didn't even recognize that I was the one that was healing you. You didn't care. When I turned and lifted you to feed you from my own person, you rejected that gift and fled instead to another power. The language here is, I've talked about the turning. The language here is of a parent who morning after morning turns to their child to sustain them and care for them and raise them up and teach them to walk and grow and mature and develop. A parent who protects and feeds and puts the Band-Aid on the boo-boo. The parent that just, that's God. And the response of that child is every time to slap the Band-Aid away. It's to throw the plate in the face. It's to run out the door into the street. It's to go to another, a stranger, and say, I want you for my mom and my dad instead of these. A child who rejects in every way the love poured out upon them. God says, this is how I've related to you, and this is how you've responded. And then God begins to describe the consequences of that. So this is what God says, because you have refused to turn to me, because you refuse my love and my tenderness, my gentility and my care, my concern, my healing and my provision, because you refuse to let me call you my children, because you've refused that and continue to go off to another power that you want to be oppressed by, you'll get what you want. I will let you have what you want. I will let you return to Egypt. You will return to Egypt, to that place of slavery and oppression, he says. And the kings will rule over you because you've refused me. These oppressors, they work in terms of violence and in terms of brutality. And so he says, as you turn away from me, swords will rage in your cities and you will be devoured by your scheming and your plotting. This is the just consequence. This is what you deserve. And finally, God says, my people are bent on turning away from me to another God. And they cry out to that God, raise us up. And that God ignores them over and over again. I mean, can you see yourself in this? Can you see the way that we turn away from God so often and we plot and we scheme? Either to take our lives into our own hands and be our own providers and healers and satisfiers, to lead ourselves, or even if we don't turn to ourselves, we turn to others. I was watching again last night. I know I've told you before, me and Katie watch a show called Shark Tank. And there was a guy on there, and somebody came up and he said, I want to start a business where there's napping. Where you can nap during the day to kind of, you know, rest your... Because he said, I know that employers want their employees rested. And one of the sharks said, I don't want my employees rested. I don't care. He said, I've slept 3 to 4 hours a night my entire adult life. And you can look at him. He's got bags under his eyes, right? And the guy goes, aren't you exhausted? He says, yeah, I'm exhausted. I'm wore out. But that's what I have to do. And if I ever walked into my place of business and there was anybody there asleep, they would be fired. Because if I don't sleep more than 4 hours a night, they don't sleep 4 hours a night. You know, scientific studies show that if you only sleep 3 to 4 hours a night for your entire adult life, you can cut your lifespan in half. But people in the hands of the power of money and empire and economy, we're just producers. We're just things to make a buck. We're just an avenue to the end of having an empire of green. And greed and lust. And God says, I've tried so desperately to love you, and you've turned away from me, and so that's the consequence of your actions. You want it? You got it. Here's the oppression. You can have it back instead of my love. Here's the brokenness. You can have it back instead of my healing. Here are the kings that will devour you by the sword. You wanted that instead of the leading of a father as of a child. And here is all the gods that you call to that let you down over and over and over again. They're yours. It's what you wanted. It's what you deserve. I know we don't like to think about God at all as a human being. It disturbs us. I know that most of the time when we think about God, God is this father figure void of emotions or void of any change of mind or void of any soft-heartedness. That we think about Jesus that way, so we're okay when we get to the New Testament, but we read the Old Testament, we go, this is the sovereign, just kind of, you know. And yet in this passage, we see God going, this is how I've tried to shape you. And my relationship to you. This is what you deserve because you have flat refused to let me gently love you. And then it's almost as if God then begins to struggle with whether or not they should be abandoned to the consequence. And this is, I love the way this reads. But how can I give you up? Listen to that. Have you ever come crawling to God on your knees, saying as the psalmist did in 22, I'm a worm. I'm a failure. I'm a nobody. I'm broken. I've failed at everything that I've tried. I'm not a good person. I can't seem to do the things that I want to do. God is absolutely right. I think that I just have this natural inclination to constantly chase after things that'll just disappoint and hurt me. You ever come crawling back to God like a worm? You ever just crawl through life feeling like you're a worm, a failure, a disappointment, an outcast? God's response to that brokenness, God's response to you in that place that you have put yourself is, how can I give you up? Even though you deserve, even though this is the just consequences, even though you're there because you put yourself there. God doesn't respond with, yeah, you ought to come crawling. God doesn't respond with, yeah, I don't know what's going on here, but you're worthless. I mean, like, come on, get it through your thick skull. God doesn't meet us with, well, listen, I hear you crawling back, but I'm going to send you back out. You get yourself together, and then you come crawling back here after you get it all in line. But God greets that brokenness with, how can I give you up? How can I hand you over? This is literally what's in the Bible. It's incredible that God just made sure we'd get this. This is a love letter, guys. How can I hand you over? How can I treat you like Admar, Zeboam? These are two cities that were near to Sodom and Gomorrah. So when the fire rained down from heaven because of their immorality and their injustice and their unrighteousness and burned up everything, Zeboam and Admar were also burned up in the fire. And God says, I can't let that happen to you. I can't let that happen to you. Because my heart recoils within me and my compassion grows tender. I love this. You know, have you ever smashed your finger with a hammer? Anybody? The show of hands. Smash your finger with a hammer. Okay, all right. Ever cut your finger with a knife? Anybody? Hands raised. Anybody ever cut your finger with a knife? You ever cut your finger with a knife and you go, you stupid, stupid finger? Probably not, right? You ever smash your finger with a hammer and go, why? You know. You cut your finger, you smash your finger. You know what you do? You go, Why? Because it's hurt. And you're going to be gentle, right? You're going to be gentle because it is a part of you. Because it is bleeding and it is aching and it's suffering. And because a part of you is suffering, even if it's just small as a finger, it affects the whole. And so you're not going to be rough and coarse and brutal and vengeful with a finger, but rather you are going to cradle and gently caress and do whatever you can possibly do to get that thing to stop hurting. And then you're going to make sure it heals up as quick as possible because it's a part of yourself. God says, I see you in all of your shame and your guilt and your brokenness and all of your pettiness and your scheming and your oppressiveness. I see you in all of that, and you are a part of me. I've created you to be a part of me in community and in relationship, and because you hurt, I hurt. And so God says to his people, it's as if God's finger or his arm or his heart has been wrenched open. And rather than being vengeful and coarse and brutal, he goes, let me hold you. Let me secure you. Let me heal you. Let me take care of you. God's very being is injured by our brokenness. And so we are received in all of our brokenness, not the way you would, you know, cut off a gangrenous limb, but the way that you would cradle an injured part of yourself in a moment of pain. And God says to Israel, I know what you deserve. I know the consequences. You got hit with a hammer. You deserve to hurt, you know. You got into the way when I was trying to cut the apple, so that's what you get. But God says, you are, as a child, you're a part of me. And I know what you deserve, but even as I think about the consequences, I can't give you up to that. I must continue to chase after you. And cradle you gently as my heart recoils. He finishes by saying, I will not execute fierce anger on you, even though they deserve it. I will not again destroy Ephraim, because they've already done a good enough job of that on their own. And he says, because I'm God, I will not treat you with wrath. Because I'm God, I will not bring my wrath on you. This is our story. This is how God has received each one of us that's willing to turn to God. It just blows my mind. How do people get this image of God in their minds of a vengeful, wrathful God, anxious to receive with condemnations and punishments every child that would do wrong? Where does that come from? I mean, I've heard that, but I've never really read much of that. God says, you are broken. And by the way, in this book, this letter is to a people who have been conquered by an empire. You know why? Because they turned away from God and wouldn't let God love them and take care of them and teach them and provide. This God says, I know you're broken. This is literally, my dad used to get calls from my cousin a lot, my cousin from jail, and my cousin would call, and he'd say, you know, all these different things to my dad. And I remember listening to my dad trying to, he'd say, what are you going to do when you get out? And my cousin would say, well, I'm going to, and I would hear my dad saying, why don't you come to my house? We'll put you up in one of the boys' rooms. We'll feed you dinner. You know, you come to church with us. Why don't you come to my house and we'll figure this out. You know, you're a good boy, you know. And then he's talking to like a 25-year-old man who's in jail. You're a good boy. Come over to our house. We'll take care of you. This is literally a love letter to God that says, I know you're broken, and I know you're hurting, and I know you're oppressed, and I know you're a mess, and I know you're totally shot because you've trusted in other things in your life that have now turned out to betray and ruin you, and you've got all this anxiety and fear and brokenness and oppression. Come to me. Come to me. Let my heart recoil with you and fill you with compassion and tenderness. Come back to me and let me be the father that I am to you. Be my child. This morning, we're gonna do a special response. I'm going to ask the band. Will you guys come on up? Matthew, sorry, I lowered your mic stand. While I talk, you can fix that. Here's the thing this morning. If you are a follower of Christ, you have been received so gently. This morning, if you're not a follower of Christ, because honestly, as you came in the room this morning, you thought the building might fall down around you. But before you came in, you got all your stuff together, put on your smile, and came in here like everybody else with it all together. Please don't be afraid to bring all that you are and have to God. The God who has called you my child, who will lead you with cords of kindness and tenderness, who will lift you to his cheek and feed you with his own life, a God who will heal you and lift you up. Please bring that to God. God desires that from you. This morning, if we trust that God is gentle, we'll bring what our needs are to his hands, and he'll take them. I want to be clear, this does not dismiss consequence, right? I mean, he says, you're getting what the consequences, but I'm not going to give you up to that, right? I'm going to keep coming after you. I think that the greatest way for us to think about gentility as a fruit of the Spirit is to say, if God greets us with all of our mess and all of our faults and all of our failures and all of our nastiness and all of our brokenness, if God receives that and says, you know what, my heart recoils and I'm filled with compassion and tenderness for you. How do I receive people that are broken when they come to us? When someone comes to you and they say, I know you're going to freak out when I tell you what I've done, but this is my story. Do we go, you know what? Yeah, you deserve all you get because you're a creep. Do we say, listen, church is a great place for you, God, but you need to go get yourself fixed up first, get stuff straightened out. I can't even talk to you right now. I'm disgusted looking at you. Do you immediately say, well, listen, you wouldn't be where you were if you hadn't A, B, C, D, you get what you pay for, you reap what you sow? Or do we think, you know, When I was broken and needy and a mess, God's heart recoiled with compassion and gentle kindness. And then would our hearts do the same thing when the brokenness of others is brought before us? When we encounter the neediness of our neighbors, does our heart recoil? Do we grab a hold of a hurting neighbor the same way God grabbed a hold of us and said, "Oh man, let's take care of this. Let's make sure we get this healed up." This morning, the response is going to take place while we sing. I'm going to ask Katie to come. She's coming with two vials of oil. In the New Testament, the leader of the church, James, he said this to his people. He said, when you have a need or a fear or an anxiety, you know what you should do? Bring it to God. Bring it before the church, and people will anoint you with oil and lay their hands on you and pray for you. And you have no need to be filled with fear and doubt and anxiety, because all the things you bring to God, God can handle. God can handle them. You got a broken relationship in your life, those things are complicated. Doctors can't fix broken relationships. God can. You got a sickness, an illness, something that's aggravating and breaking your body down. You know, God made your body. And he made your heart and your mind. And God will tenderly and compassionately wrap his recoiling heart around you. Do you have stresses, financial needs, burdens, job situations, family situations, home situations? God will not be ashamed or embarrassed to receive you with his gentility. So this morning, I'm going to be over here. Katie's going to be over here. This is confidential, totally confidential. We want to invite you just to come as the song sings one at a time. And we just want to anoint you and pray for you this morning. We're working on getting an altar. We need one, especially this morning. But I want you to treat me and Katie like an altar. I want you to come and bring those needs. And we really just stand here in the place of God this morning who says, give it to me. I'll be gentle. I'll be kind. If you've fallen, I'll lift you up to my cheek the way a father does. If you're hurting and hungry, I'll feed you with my own life the way that a mother does her newborn. So they're going to sing, and we're going to receive your needs in the place. Hand them to God and trust that the one who has called you his child will gently provide for your brokenness this morning. Come to us as we sing together.